Here is the Director General of the BBC, Sir William Haley.
Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot tonight present Itmar. Tommy Handley, that man, that humorous, ebullient, kindly man, around whose personality it was built and whose art held it together, is dead. If this evening we pay tribute to the show, as well as to the star, that will be as he himself would have wished. For in Itmar, Tommy Handley and his team, scriptwriter, producer, actors and actresses, created something significant. Itmar spans an age. The very title, with all it denotes if ever you stop to think about it, tells you how much history its lifetime covers. It's that man again, originally meant Hitler. How typically English it is that an epithet at first devised for something threatening and hateful should have been transferred to one of the most welcome and most lovable of men. In affliction, in adversity, in triumph, and in austerity, Itmar typified the spirit of the British nation. And Tommy Handley, the man to whom everything happened, who had to suffer curmudgeons and cranks and clowns, who resourcefully came through every ordeal, and whose cheerfulness and sanity never failed, was the man we all of us in our inmost hearts felt ourselves to be. But while Itmar was Handley's masterpiece, he was never a one-part man. He had 15 years of success at the microphone before ever Itmar began. He was not only broadcasting's greatest, but also its most natural comedian. He had that rare gift, which few are born with, and most never acquire, of being able to broadcast sincerity. As you listened to him, you felt you were receiving a personality as well as an act. And the personality was that of an essentially friendly and good man. The sense of a friend being missing will be felt tonight in millions of homes. The other abiding impression of Tommy Handley, to put alongside that of his sincerity, was his vitality. He threw himself heart and soul into all he did. The biggest BBC show and the smallest children's party found him ready to give all he had. It was a joy to work with him. He was so alive and so gay. His shows were always happy ones behind the scenes, as well as at the microphone. When David Garrick died, Dr. Johnson's remark that the event had eclipsed the gaiety of nations was regarded as a friendly exaggeration. Even today, though broadcasting throws its net so wide, the phrase is still perhaps somewhat extravagant. But it is truer of Tommy Handley than of any other man. He brightened the lives of a great part of the British people and of the peoples of the Commonwealth. He had his listeners in the countries of Europe also. With his death, something inestimable has been lost. It would be idle to pretend that we shall, as a nation, therefore lose the capacity to laugh at our troubles, or that other great jesters will not arise. Of course, they will. But they will not be Tommy Handley. He was a true original. For the men and women and children of this generation, to whom Itmar meant something that no other show will ever mean, and who tonight hold Tommy Handley in grateful and affectionate memory, there will never be anyone quite like that man again.
The Director General has just put in words what we here are feeling very strongly at this moment, because we're in the studio from which Itmar was first broadcast in June 1939. You may not remember those first four broadcasts before the war, because Itmar as we know it and remember it today only really took shape after the war had started. BBC programs had to be changed overnight from peace to wartime footing. And amongst the hastily improvised programs was a half-hour show called It's That Man Again, featuring Tommy Handler. It was some weeks before anyone realized that Itmar was anything more than one of the many shows pouring out of the parish halls that served as temporary studios. But quite suddenly, people began to preface telephone calls with, "This is Fumph speaking," and started to make a weekly date with Mrs. Tickle, the charlady, Dotty, the secretary, and Fusspot, the permanent civil servant. For Tommy Handley had been created the first Minister of Aggravation and Mysteries. His office of Twerps was a perfect setting in which to laugh at the new regulations and restrictions which had suddenly come into our lives. Tommy, assisted by Jack Train, Maurice Denham, Vera Lennox and Sam Custer, made red tape seem even funnier. When the second series was broadcast, somehow the time seemed to have passed for light-hearted cracks at overburdened officialdom. And so Tommy found himself the mayor of foaming at the mouth, a plage of unbelievable dinginess, christened by someone the last resort. The first special musical arrangement was, appropriately enough, "I Do Like to Be Beside the Seaside." Everything, and more than everything, happened at Foaming at the Mouth. And Tommy, having pawned the lighthouse, spent the money on organizing beauty competitions. His two beauty queens were Kay Cavendish and Paula Green. Here's one of their songs. It's a rather special one. It's the one they sang at Windsor Castle when, on Princess Elizabeth's 16th birthday, Tommy and his company gave what was the first Royal Command performance of a radio show.
"Well, hello, big boy. What's cooking? Would you like to get your picture taken? There may be a movie contract in it, so come on there, it'll only take a minute. Watch the birdie, we'll take a candid camera shot. Watch the birdie, come on and give that all you've got. Watch the birdie, just look around and pick a spot and hold it. Watch the birdie, just strike a funny pose a while. Watch the birdie, ah, you can beat that pose a mile. Watch the birdie, now let me see your pretty smile and hold it. We're looking for a tall, dark, handsome man with eyes of blue and a golden tan. Strong white teeth like Joel McRae. Hey, you, will you get out of the way? Watch the birdie, we'll take a candid camera shot. Watch the birdie, come on and give it all you've got. Watch the birdie, just look around and pick a spot and hold it. Watch the birdie. Watch the birdie. Watch the birdie. Now let me see your pretty smile and hold it. Don't smirk, you twerp. We're looking for a tall, dark, handsome man with eyes of blue and a golden tan and strong white teeth like Joel McRae. Hey, you. What, me? Will you get out of the way? We'll take a candid camera shot. Come on and give it all you've got. Watch the birdie. Just look around and pick a spot and hold it. You look around, you pick a spot, you strike a funny pose, and then you hold it.
Foaming at the Mouth was destined to be the birthplace of a host of famous Itmar characters and catchphrases. Claude and Cecil, Sam Scram, Ally Oop, and Senior So-So, the Diver. And many others played by Sidney Keith, Dino Galvani, Horace Percival, and Jack Train. But perhaps the most famous was that dear Dickensian and occasionally Rabelaisian charlady, Mrs. Mopp, with a "Can I Do You Now, Sir?" played by Dorothy Summers. Surrounded by this galaxy, Tommy reached the 100th ITMA, and Charles Shadrill and the Variety Orchestra played this tune that evening in the Grand Theatre, Llandudno. Editions of ITMA, probably the most outstanding and the one best remembered was the broadcast from Scapa Flow on the occasion of Tommy's visit to the Navy. The whole ITMA company travelled to the Orkneys and entertained not only the Royal Navy, but the Fleet Air Arm and the Royal Air Force as well. Seldom in the history of broadcasting has such a warm-hearted greeting been heard, as in this special naval edition, during which Paula Green, whose appearance on the stage was greeted in true naval style, sang, "My mother did so before me." Here is Paula to remind us of an unforgettable occasion.
I am a brisk and bonny lass, a little over 20, and by my comely air and dress of sweethearts I've got plenty. But I'll beware of wedlock's snare, though dying swains adore me. The men I'll tease, myself to please, my mother did so before me. Now, sailors, all to you I sing, I think you are so charming. The tales you tell, defenseless maids, are really most disarming. You have a wife in every port, according to the story. But I've a beau in every ship, my mother did so before me. Well, I'll manage if if I wed my husband to perfection. And as good wives have always said, keep husbands in subjection. No sneering fool me e'er shall rule, nor e'er eclipse my glory. I'll let him see, mistress I'll be. My mother did so. My mother did so before me.
The only member of the original Itmar cast who was still with Tom Handy last Thursday was Jack Train, whose Colonel Chinstrap was my favorite character. Tommy's weekly encounter with this ever-thirsty warrior was always one of the high spots. And when he became teetotal, I, for one, felt that things had rarely taken a serious turn. The next piece of music, called A Stroll with the Colonel, might almost be called The Old Rake's Progress from Pub to Pub. Soon became a mirror of the times, and Tommy a sort of licensed jester. Consequently, Itmar moved about a good deal. When the grave food situation made agriculture a number one priority, we discovered that Tommy was busy cultivating his farm at much fiddling. He grew everything from potatoes to pineapples. This Itmar version of the traditional air is sung now by that old Itmanian, Clarence Wright.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. If you'll only look and see, I think you will agree that the farmer is the man who feeds them all. The farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, buys on credit till the fall. Then they take him by the hand and they lead him to the land, and the merchant is the man who gets it all. The doctor hangs around while the blacksmith heats his iron. Oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. The preacher and the cook go strolling by the brook, and the farmer is the man who feeds them all. The farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, buys on credit till the fall. Though his family comes to town with a wagon broken down, oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. Has to fill in swarms of those complicated forms and post a dozen copies to Whitehall. So he sits up half the night trying to get the darn thing right, and the farmer is the man who signs them all. The farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, earns the thanks of one and all. And when this old war is through, maybe really gets it due, for the farmer is the man who gets it all.
When the war in Europe was over, this tight little island became too tight to hold Tommy, and he appointed himself governor of Tomtopia, which fortunately had just been discovered. Pursued by the redoubtable Miss Hotchkiss, Diana Morrison, he found in Tomtopia a strange collection of people. There was Major Munday and his simple daughter, Naive, Carlton Harps and Jean Capra. There was Wamba Mabjuba, the ex-BBC overseas announcer, played by Hugh Morton, later to become Sam Fairfecken and the man with the snitch of puff. There was Ruby Rockcake, Mary O'Farrell. And, of course, Chief Bigger Banger, a Fred Yule creation. Fred, second only to Jack Train in length of Itmar service. In Tomtopia was celebrated Victory Day, and Tommy himself took the salute as the impressive cavalcade swung past.
Through the tropical jungle comes the colorful procession of Tomtopia's leading dignitaries, led by, I can't quite see them here, but boy, it's wonderful! Tomtopia's sons of toil, the harmonious blacksmiths, with their tremendous muscles swinging in the breeze. What's this? Boy, this is something. Tomtopia's land girls, acres of them. Taking the salute is His Excellency the Governor, seated on a white charger. I will amend that. Seated on His Excellency the Governor is a white charger. Yes, friends, he's bolted. The charger, I mean. With this thought, we reluctantly say farewell. Oh!
Needless to say, the governor's chief interest lay in Bigger Bango's beautiful daughter, Banjalea, who prefaced the translation of her father's speeches with the Papa He Say. Lynn Joyce played this part as Banjalea sang this song.
No can do, no can do. My mama and my papa say I no can do. No can do, no can do. I want for me to go with you, but no can do. You like me, I like you. I like for you to Romeo your Juliet. No can do, no can do. My mama and my papa say I no can do. The moon she say to me, come on, come out tonight. I want for you to hold my hand and hold me tight. And love it can't be wrong, and so it must be right. But oh, no can do, no can do. I like to do it, what you call it, pitch the woo. No can do, no can do. My mama and my papa say I no can do. My mama and my papa say I no can do.
From Tomtopia to Last Thursday, many famous characters have flitted across the Itmar stage. Mona Lott, Joan Harvard, Sophie Tuckshop, Hattie Jakes, Tatty McIntosh, Molly Weir. And recently, Tommy's fellow Liverpudlian, Frisby Dyke, played by Derek Dyler. In this last series, Handley's curbside choristers, directed by George Mitchell, were introduced, and Tommy himself chose their first song, In the Shade of the Old Apple Tree. Here it is, sung by the choir and accompanied by the BBC Variety Orchestra, whose conductor, Ray Jenkins, was one of Tommy's favorite foils. In this brief half hour, we've tried to recall, very inadequately, I'm afraid, the ever-changing miniature world that was Itmar. Yet it was always the same, for it revolved around that great genius, Tommy Handley. Without that man, there can be no Itmar. We in the studio knew him so well as a great colleague. We are sure that he would wish us to end tonight as we began in 1939. And so, in memory of a good friend, our good friend, I give you a toast. Ladies and gentlemen, Itmar.
I think he was the perfect artist to work with, always appreciating the other person's difficulties. If we, or the orchestra, or any other member of the cast, couldn't quite get the feeling of a sequence in a script, he didn't mind how many times we went over it, as long as we got it right.
Yes, and his timing was so consistently good that once we got the feeling of it, it became quite simple to fit the effects into its rhythm. Even the door, the famous Itmar door, had to be opened and closed in tempo with the rest of the line.
Yes. It's amazing to think, chaps, that battered old door over there was used for Itmar in Bristol, Bangor, and even at Windsor Castle for a command performance.
Yes, Tommy once remarked that we should have by appointment painted on it.
Yes, he had a gag for every occasion. Everybody knew him to be a great artist, but we will always remember him in the words of one of his old Itmar characters, as a great guy.
I tell you what, John, let's open and close the old door Itmar fashion, eh? Just as a reminder.
Okay.